treat the divorce that way?
Yeah, well, I mean, to me, that's what's interesting about, in my life, about being divorced. Some people get hung up in the new relationship of them to their ex. That's a different story to me. That's not an interesting story to me to tell. And I've seen it, you know. There's been a lot of, you know, ex-wives or, you know, a woman in the guy's life who's a bummer. I don't think we needed that. I don't think it was something I was excited about adding to television is, oh, there's the old ex, you know, or some fantasy version of look how great my ex is. To me, the most important change in my life when I got divorced was that I was a single father and that I really had to take on fatherhood by myself. That to me, I haven't seen a lot of, and that's what was coming out of me. So those are the stories that I told, and I decided, let's just do that, and let's just leave that other part alone completely. It's not what I'm set out to do. So, yeah, I think I like it better this way.
Was it easy to kind of go to that place, knowing that it was so new to you and maybe a little vulnerable as far
yeah.
as...
That place, you mean with it being a single dad, or...
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a unique experience, and it's one that not a lot of people know about. Like, when I take my kids to lunch at a restaurant, sometimes the waitress will come over and say, oh, this is so nice that you're getting to have lunch with your dad, my kids. And to us, it sounds stupid, because this is what we do. I'm not a Sunday dad. I don't visit with my kids. I share custody of them. I raise them. So... that role of the dad is unusual. Sometimes if my kid falls down in a park and cries, some total strange woman will come over and try to grab her. And I've tried to not hit people because it's like my kid's being abducted. She's crying. And somebody, a total stranger grabs your kid while she's crying. But they'll do that because they just assume, because I'm a dad, that I'm probably not with the kid a lot. I probably just, you know, my wife forced me to take the kids to the park, and she needs a mom. But from me and my daughter's point of view, the idea that my crying child would rather have a crazy stranger with her instead of her dad is great. So all of this, I realized when I started having this life experience that there's not a lot of people that know what this is like, so that makes it interesting.
Great. Thank you very much.
Sure. Your next question comes from Sax Carr with Crave Online. Please go ahead.
Hi, Louis. I have an unusual question for you. I've always been a fan of your work with Rick Shapiro, who I would say, from meeting him once and watching the show, seems awfully crazy. What's that like?
Rick is great. Rick is a guy who, he's nutty and his life is nutty, but I don't know much about that. I don't really know Rick personally that well. All I know is that every project I've done, ever, I've called Rick in to do something, and he always shows up to work. He knows his stuff. You know, he's a little nutty, but that doesn't mean anything to me. What I know of him professionally is that he always knows the material and he can make great adjustments. He's very thoughtful about that stuff that he does. It's a controlled chaos. And I ask him to explode and do this stuff, but I also ask him for different versions, and he's extremely thoughtful. He writes a lot of stuff down and thinks about it. He asks a lot of questions about what I want. He really serves the show when I'm with him. But to the audience, it looks like I just invited a complete lunatic onto the set. And that, to me, there's a lot of value in that.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Your next question comes from Nick Nunziata with CHUD.com.
Hello. Hey, it's Nick and Chud. Louis, you know, you talk about a lot how lazy you are. There's a lot of that stuff that works into your material. But as anyone who's a fan of your work and has followed you are one of the more prolific people out there. And you've had the sneak attack with the first season, and you were doing a lot, stealing a lot of shots, getting out there and being really guerrilla. What have you had to change about your approach now that you're a known commodity to the general public here, and how has that affected your creativity when you're shooting on the fly in the biggest city in the world?
Well, you know what? New York is a great place to shoot because they kind of don't give a shit that you're shooting. And, you know, the stuff we're shooting is still narrative, and it's still just sort of, we shoot it cinematically. So, I mean, it's not that, it's like if somebody who really has a problem with somebody like Sasha doing, well, you can only do Borat once and everybody knows him. But I'm not involving these other people. So, you know, there is always... having a TV show and being an actor and that kind of stuff, a comedian, that's not a lifestyle that's very interesting to other people. So you have to reach out for stories and keep yourself. You know, I have kids, and so I live a regular life with them. So that keeps me grounded and also keeps me full of ideas and inspiration. But to me, the second season is a lot of pressure. It has to be better than the first season. That's my goal. The second season, it has to dig deeper, and it has to go. I have to find new ways. You know, TV is a very rough business, and you have to. It's kind of like a desert, and you have to be like a cactus. You have to be a kind of plant that has a lot of ways to draw nutrients from the soil, and it has to develop too. You have to evolve quickly. So the first season, yeah, you're right. I was like a rookie pitcher, but everybody is. I've faced every batter in the league now, and they all know me. So second year, you have to develop a slider or something else.
Well, I love the fact that your slider in this case is, with all this pressure, you do a fart joke that takes 15 minutes to tell. I think that's really.
Yes,
so,
listen.
So thank
that's
you for
me. That's
for that.
That's definitely off-speed stuff here. We had that episode was definitely a good change-up. It started with just sweet stuff about the kid, and then it got to be awful stuff about the kid, and then there's really kind of dramatic introduction of this character, and then a fucking terrifying emergency, and then really strange, interesting characters from across the hall, and then just the greatest, loudest fart ever. Yeah.
Well, thank you for being you, and don't ever stop, man.
Thanks, man. I'm just trying to keep people out of the box. Trying to keep people out of the batter's box. Don't dig in too far.
Awesome.
Enjoy the show.
Next question comes from Bill Jones with Pads and Panels. Please go ahead.
So I was just curious. I mean, obviously, season one, all the episodes, you focus on one or two major themes. And or stories, and without giving away too much, can you get into it all? You know, what people can expect out of season two's stories and themes that are coming up.
I think we have more single story episodes, if I'm not mistaken. I think there's more this year that there's just one that carries the whole episode. There's a lot more to do with the kids this year. Like in the first episode. There's more me engaged with the children. There's more longer dialogues with them. And I think the first season was more about my early time as a single dad, where I was a little more just bewildered by having kids and a little unsure. And this season is more about me not being good at having kids, but being more trying to get my head around it and more engaged with them as human beings, that are just, you know, comedy props. So there's definitely more. That's a big change this year. There's all different characters. One thing about this show is if you miss the whole first season, it really doesn't matter. This season has absolutely no bearing. It's like a whole other product. It's different. I don't have a brother this season. I have two sisters that probably won't be in the third season. It's just a whole different group of people. We live in a different apartment than we used to. It's all different stuff. And there's some stories that take us to really cool places. Hold on a second.
Hey, are you okay in there? Okay. All right. He's going to be in here.
All right. Go ahead, guys. Sorry. Go ahead, guys. Sorry.
Oh, no, sorry. But you were mentioning not having a brother this season, but having some sisters that may not reappear, and just some of the different themes this season.
Yes.
Yeah. Hi, is Louis still on the line?
Yeah, sorry, my face pressed the mute button again. That's it. There's just a lot of different new characters and a little more action and totally different from last season.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Next question comes from Melissa Guérimont with the Televixen. Please go ahead.
Hi there. I find a lot of your live comedy and also your TV show deals with children and saying things that most parents probably would never dream of saying about their kids. What reaction do you get from your fans that also happen to be parents for, you know, putting into words what they're too scared to say themselves?
Yeah, I guess most parents find it kind of a good catharsis and a relief to find out it's okay to say these things. I mean, I always feel like there's enough pressure on parents just to do a good job of being parents, but there's also this added pressure to just sort of keep this told this line that everything's great all the time, or that everything is clean, and that everything is antiseptic in the world of raising kids, and that it goes perfectly. There's so much pressure on parents to sort of present that idea, and it just ain't true. And at least folks could say how it feels. It's not much to ask. So I think most parents enjoy it, and I mean, nothing I say about kids is outside of the context of loving them very much, so... I mean, that's assumed that we all love our kids, and that's what puts you in a high pressure place in raising them. That's what makes it difficult. So it's a high stakes game, and it gets boring, and dark, and difficult, and desperate. And talking about those feelings is hard. It's awfully important. You got to talk about them. I mean, you should even model that behavior to your kids. That you talk about how the toughest things, if you can talk about them, especially in laughing, there's just nothing better than that.
Well, thank you very much. Best of luck with the rest of the season.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Daniel Calbisi with Act 4 Screenplays. Please go ahead.
Hi, Louis. Hi. I have a lot of readers who are screenwriters, so I wanted to ask you about writing. How has your writing process changed with season 2 from season 1? And then, in general, how do you craft the jokes in a comedy sequence, like when you're blocking out a scene or a sequence? How do you really get the best jokes and roll with it with the actors on set?
Well, the writing process for this show, I try to write as much as I can before we go into production. I write the show myself. I don't have a staff, so I don't have the same process as other shows. I don't break stories, which is what a lot of sitcoms do. It's called breaking story, where you put the story up sort of on the timeline and you discuss it and you make sure that it's functioning as an engine, before you write it. And then you piece it out, and then somebody writes this part or somebody writes all of it. And then you table it, and the whole table gives notes and works to improve it. And then usually all those notes and improvements change the structure, so you re-break the story with the dialogue already in place, and then you put in the jokes sort of at the end. But I don't do that. I have stories rolling around in my head, and usually I'll have a surge of realizing where the story is supposed to be and where it's supposed to go. And then I'll sit down and I'll just shit it out. I just write it. And the jokes just kind of come. You know, there's not jokes in my show like trading of quips, you know, that kind of Will and Grace sort of punch-up jokes. I don't sort of do that. So the jokes end up just being how the folks are talking in the dialogue. It just ends up coming out that way. The characters that I'm writing are, I try to get them really in my head, and then I just trade dialogue and get from one end of the scene to the other. And then I don't generally go back and rewrite much. When I'm on the set, because I'm the writer, I can make audible calls and cut lines and add maybe one or two. But mostly I try to keep it organic. I try not